Welcome to This Is Sober Podcast. I'm Molly Desch, your host and sober coach. And today I am joined with a gentleman who is a true inspiration to those who faced addiction and are seeking a way to overcome it. After battling a weekend alcohol and cocaine addiction for 8 years, he lost his job of 24 years as a result. Instead of giving up, he turned his life around and spent the next 14 years working tirelessly on himself and helping others understand addiction. In March of 2021, he started the Other Side of Addiction podcast, which has quickly become a space for open and honest dialogue about addiction and recovery. And just this past February, he started the Addiction Resource Collective networking group in an effort to connect people with the resources and support they need to overcome addiction. He believes it's time to lift each other up, and he's leading the way with his powerful message of hope and healing. Without further ado, I would like to introduce you to Al Richards. Thank you so much for being here this morning. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you so much, Molly, for giving me this opportunity. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad to have you here. So I'm sure everybody is dying to hear about how you became sober. So if you want to start off by letting everybody know about your struggles with addiction.
All right. Well, you know, to be honest, right up the front, I didn't think I had a problem, right? Which a lot of us do. You know, I worked for a manufacturing plant here in Salt Lake City. Started with them in February of 86 and slowly worked my way up into management. Had an opportunity in 98 to go help a plant get run more efficiently in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And so I was going through a divorce at the time, and it was pretty nasty. And I could see it was affecting our daughters, and I didn't want our daughters to be around that. So I took that opportunity, as much as I didn't want to leave my kids, to get away from it, so they didn't have to be around all that negativity and arguing. And I spent 3 years there and wanted to come back to be with my kids again, and had the opportunity to get transferred back. And when I came back, you know, they put me over the fabric softener department. And for those of you, that's the fabric softener sheets that you throw in your dryer. And I was over that for, I don't know, 6-7 months. And then they put me over 5 other packaging departments. And we had a lot of projects going on. Things were changing all the time. Before I knew it, I was over 6 packaging departments. I was over the parts room. I was over housekeeping. I was over property maintenance. So I had about 43 employees that worked underneath me, about every nationality you could think of. I got to learn personalities pretty well because, you know, different cultures, you have to talk to them in different ways so you don't offend them. And I went to a party, and someone offered me a line of cocaine, and it's been a long time. I did cocaine back in my construction days, back in the 80s and early 90s, the early 80s. And I said, man, gosh, it's been a long time. You know what? Why not? And so I did, not realizing that it was going to get to the point where I really needed to have it every single weekend. My stress level was extremely high. I brought my work home with me. I'd work 14, 15 hours a day, come home, and that's all I thought about, what needed to be done tomorrow. And I just continued to do it. And it was crazy because I've had some people say, oh, come on, you had to have done it during the week. I'm like, uh-uh. Every Friday and Saturday. I mean, I worked 13, 14 hours a day until Friday came. I worked 8 hours. I was on the phone calling my guy, meeting him, heading to the liquor store or the store, wherever, grabbing some booze, go home, start doing some lines, doing my yard work. I did this for 8 years. And what's crazy is when I left that party, I'll back up just a second here. When I left that party, my girlfriend, who is now my wife, she said, hey, what were you doing going into the restroom all the time? And I was honest with her. I told her, I says, I was doing some coke. She goes, you promised me that you'll never do that again. And I promised her. But in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, this is definitely a promise I'm not keeping. And so anyway, as time went, I hadn't been drug tested for about 15 years. And I got hit with a drug test. And I was able to get out of it the first day. And of course, I went home, got on the phone, started calling people, man, how the hell can I, how can I get clean? I got to flush myself out. I don't know how to do this. And I was trying all kinds of stuff, went in the next day, of course, went and took the UA. And about a week and a half later, I heard over the radio that the HR manager wanted to talk to my boss. And instantly, the blood rushed out of my body down to my feet. I knew exactly what it was about. And sure enough, about a half hour later, my boss comes to my office and he says, we need to talk. And the owner of the company had sold it about a year before. And I really do believe that if the owner still would have been there, I probably would have got a slap on the wrist and probably suspension and still had a job. But with corporate world, when you're making 36 bucks an hour and, you know, you got a lot of vacation and PTO, and it's an opportunity for them to get rid of you, make an example of you. And that's exactly what they did. And it was tough when they called me in and told me I had lost my job. Man, that was, it's like I had the rug ripped right out from underneath me, because this had been my life for 24 years. It's all I flipping knew. I worked my butt off to get to where I was at. And I blew it just so I could have some lines of cocaine on the weekend. I ended up having to tell my wife what happened, because I'm the type of person that I don't miss work. And when I was on that suspension before they actually called me in and told me I lost my job, she's like, what is going on? And I want you to be honest with me. And I told her, and we had just gotten married. And I says, I'm on suspension because I failed a UA for cocaine. And of course it broke her heart, right? Because I promised her I wouldn't do this anymore. So I didn't start out being a very good husband. You know, I was lying the whole time. And what's crazy, Molly, she had no clue I was doing coke. She knew I was drinking because she drank too, but she had no idea. So after I lost my job, I went into some depression. And about 2 weeks goes by and my wife comes home from work and I'm still in my underwear laying in bed. And she goes, what did you do today? And I said, nothing. And she goes, you know, I've about had enough of this. She goes, you're better than this. She goes, we got a bunch of gift certificates and that from our marriage. You're going to paint the living room. And I looked at her and I said, the hell if I am. I'm good right where I'm at, sitting here in this bed, feeling sorry for myself. And she goes, no, come on. She goes, we're going to go to the store and we're going to go look for some colors. Long story short, we went and found some colors. As each day went, I started finding myself doing more and more in the house. And before I knew it, the living room was painted. And I get emotional because I really have to thank her, because she woke me up. And I realized I needed to do some really deep searching, and I quit everything. I didn't go to any rehabs, no nothing. I just said, I'm done. No more drinking, no more cocaine. I had gotten myself up to about 198 pounds, which I always kept myself very fit. I used to compete in bodybuilding and stuff. And I'm looking at myself and I'm going, man, life's got to change. And I had a few friends call me that I worked with, and a couple of them were honest, and they told me that they never trusted me. And that was hard to take. And I'm like, I never stole from you. I always treated you with respect. And we were there for our kids' birthday parties and births and family events. And they said, no, we never could believe you. You're a liar and a manipulator. And that really hurt. And I started doing some more thinking about it. And I went, man, they're right. I had a dad that was extremely hard on me, and I learned how to lie and manipulate my way through all kinds of stuff just so I wasn't going to get my butt kicked. Not realizing it, I took it all the way into my adulthood. And I did the same thing as an adult just to get my way. And I hadn't hit my knees in about, since I was probably 13 years old. It took me 2 days to do it, Molly, because I was embarrassed. And I hit my knees and I asked God, I says, you know, I was asking for your help. This is not the help I was looking for. But if this is the way it's going to be, I don't know what to do. And slowly but surely, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to figure out who Al Richards is. I'm not going to go search for anything. I'm just going to figure it out. I'm just going to start moving and I'm going to see where it leads. And being a spiritual person that I am, God just kept putting the right people in front of me. And here it is, umpteen laters, man. And you know, things are still tough financially because I choose not to punch a clock for someone. I do a lot of other jobs here to keep money coming in. However, my life's changed completely. People who know me now, when I tell them my story, they're like, no way, that was never you. And I said, oh yeah, it was me. So that was kind of my journey of getting out of it. You know, I was just, I don't know if I'm considered a lucky one, Molly, where I was just able to stop. That was it for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. You said your wife never had any idea that you were doing that. I feel like a lot of people hide their addictions from their loved ones. You know, I talk to a lot of women and their husbands, they have no idea. They don't think that they really have a problem. How did you hide that?
You know, it's with me only doing it on Saturdays or Fridays and Saturdays. I just had a way of doing it. You know, I would be able to get home from work on Friday before my wife got home. I'd be able to get things all chopped up or do whatever. And I just had a way of to being able to go, okay, well, I can go to the restroom or I could go out in the garage. And I was just able to do it. And I wasn't one that ever got, you know, sometimes that word tweaking, you know, where you can see someone tweaking, they're gritting their teeth and they're all antsy. I never got that way. You know, doing cocaine was, for me, was just kind of a release. And if I did feel myself start getting to that point, all I do was have a couple shots and it would just bring me right back down. So the whole time when we were drinking on weekends and having friends coming over and playing darts or cards, you know, I played that balancing act. You know, if I started getting too high on the cocaine, I'd take a couple shots of whiskey and it would level me out. And if I started feeling like I was getting a little bit too drunk because of the shots of whiskey, I'd do a few more lines and it would level me out. And I was just able to keep it completely hidden from her. I mean, the whole flipping time. I mean, even after, right after we got married, I went out to my mom and dad's fifth wheel to get changed because a lot of the women were in the house changing and I was getting into some normal clothes. And I was out in my mom and dad's fifth wheel doing a line right after we got married. And again, she had no clue. No one knew. I guess becoming a professional liar and manipulator, I was able to do that one pretty well also.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. We definitely become professional hiders,
yeah,
if you will, and manipulators. A lot of the people, when they discover that we have an addiction, sometimes they try and make it about them. Like, well, what's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? And it's never about anybody else. It's about ourselves, right? There's something in ourselves that we're trying to mask or cover up. In your self-discovery and your journey of who is Al Richards, what was your why? Why did you keep doing it for so long?
Wow, that's a great question, Molly, because I just, again, in all honesty, I just figured this out probably 6 or 7 months ago in this long journey I've been on. You know, I spent the majority of my life doing my best to please my dad, you know, because to him, in his eyes, I was always the black sheep. I was always the one that did things half-assed. You know, I was one you couldn't count on. And I was a hard worker. He taught me how to work hard. And I did that. And I realized even all the way up into my 50s, I was doing everything I could to please the man. And, you know, I found out even in my early 50s, it took that long. The family kept it a secret from me. He wasn't my real dad. I thought he was my real dad the whole time. He adopted me when I was 2, when he married my mom. So here's this guy who I thought was my biological dad, wasn't my biological dad. And when I found that out, it started making sense to me why he was the way he was with me and wasn't that way with my brother and my sister. So I started really thinking, and I'm like, you know what? I think a lot of that had to do with it. It was like my release. I was holding in a lot of pain, a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. And he and I got into a big argument, and I stood up for myself for the very first time. And he slapped me on the chest, and before I knew it, he was laying on the ground. I just shoved him, and he was laying on the ground. And I went over him, and I said, "This will be the last time you ever lay a hand on me again. You've been doing it my whole life, and you're not doing this anymore." And, you know, he ended up telling me, "Get the F off his property. Don't ever show my effing face here again." And the last time I saw my dad was February of last year in Yuma. My mom and dad go to Yuma every year for the winter, and he was on his deathbed. He was dying. And I did see a tear go down the side of his cheek when he saw me walk into the hospital room, because I'm pretty sure he didn't think I was showing up, and I almost didn't. But my wife again said, you're going to do the right thing. You know, this is the right thing for you to do. Leave whatever happened in the past. And I did. I took her advice, and I'm very glad that I did. And then, you know, also the stress of things. But I think the majority of it was just from my childhood, like with what happens to a lot of us. You know, there's some kind of trauma, or whether we've been sexually assaulted, or whether there was some type of an accident or a death or something. We hold on to it and it festers, and we don't realize that it's doing that until we find something that can help put the Band-Aid on it.
It's an interesting story, because I relate to that really well. My oldest son, his dad isn't really a part of his life, and he was raised by my ex-husband. So it's kind of similar to you. He grew up knowing that, you know, my ex-husband wasn't his real dad. But once my ex-husband and I had our own kid, I could see how he treated the two differently. And it's heartbreaking as a mom watching that. But I can definitely empathize with you. And I know how that feels. You know, I experienced that too with my own parents when they were divorced. It sucks being treated differently just because you're not their own flesh and blood. And it eats at you. And like you said, it festers. What are some of the ways that you were able to work through those emotions?
You know, working on me, and also learning how to forgive. You know, my mom asked me many, many times, because it was really hard on my mom, you know, kind of like what you were just saying. And I told her, I says, "Mom, I have forgiven Dad, you know, and I'll never take away the good things that he taught me. He taught me how to hunt, how to survive in the mountains. You know, he taught me how to be a hard worker, but there's also a lot of things he taught me that I didn't want to be. And I was being that person until I finally realized I didn't want to be that anymore. So it really helped me to have that forgiveness. And I also think it was a bonus that I did go to Yuma, because when they took all the oxygen and everything off, he was still able to talk. And, you know, they came in and started injecting the IV full of stuff. And, you know, I sat there and I watched my dad die right in front of me. You know, I had my sister in my arms, and my mom was there by his side. My brother was still here in Utah. And even in the hospital, once they took the oxygen, he was still freaking throwing mud at me. Still, he's dying and he's still throwing his freaking mud at me. But I was taking it. I just, it was like water rolling off of a duck's back. It didn't matter to me anymore what he thought, because I had finally figured out who I was as an individual. I wasn't the person he said I was. I was back in the day, of course, he was 100% right, but he still thought I was that same person. It's because he didn't take the opportunity to even figure out who I was. And that's what really, really helped me. You know, it just, it got me through it. I just had to keep believing in who I was and who I am and who I'm becoming. And it just, it got me through it.
It's a really abstract idea of thinking about, you know, uncovering who you are. Like, what sort of specific activities or exercises or things have you done to uncover who you are, like at a tangible level? If somebody's trying to figure out who they are because they're struggling with addiction too, what would you say to them?
Wow, that's a really, I don't think I've ever been asked that question. You know, I just started moving forward. I just changed my mindset. I just started telling myself, I am not the person who I am right now. I don't know who I'm going to become. I don't know how long it's going to take me to find that person. All I know is I'm going to continue to start walking forward, and they're going to be baby steps. And I decided it was time for me to get back in shape again. So I started riding my mountain bike, and then eventually I was able to come up with some money to where I could join a gym. And I started sharing. I started opening up. But it, what's crazy is the opening up that I was sharing. So my wife fell into alcoholism. So it's kind of crazy. We switched roles. I was coming out of my addiction that she didn't know I had while she fell into an addiction. And that sounds crazy, but that also helped me, Molly, because it started opening my eyes with a lot of different things. But for an individual that's going through it, I've said this on some of my interviews, man, just start taking baby steps. You know, even if you move your foot forward 1 inch, that's 1 inch forward. Don't go backwards. Just take little teeny tiny steps, and don't think you have to get somewhere in a flash. You didn't get into your mess the next day. It took time. It's going to take time for you to get out of it. But if you keep your mindset strong and forward, and you believe in who you are as an individual, before you know it, you start finding things out about you that you didn't even know that you had. And it, to me, again, I'm a very spiritual person. And I believe when I started doing that, God started placing, and for me, my higher power is God. God started placing the right people in front of me. And I mean, they were coming out of the woodwork. It's just, it's crazy. And I had a customer once, I was doing insulation stuff. I'd go up and inspect attics, and if they qualified, we'd fill out paperwork and they could have an extra 18 inches of insulation put in their attic at no cost to them. It was like an energy conservation type thing. And I qualified this one lady, and I sat down in her kitchen and was at her kitchen table doing the paperwork. And I could see at the corner of my eye that she kept staring at me. And her name is Bibi. I'll never forget her name. And she goes, "Al, something's telling me I need to give you a book." And I said, "Bibi, thank you so much, but I'm not a reader. I think reading's boring. I don't care for it." And she was quiet. And I started doing the paperwork again. And she goes, "Al, something is really telling me to give you a book. Would you please take it?" And I said, "Bibi, thank you so much for your offer. But, you know, again, I'm not a reader. You'll give it to me and it'll just sit." And she freaked out on me. She said, "You either take this effing book or you get the hell out of my house right now." And I mean, that's how she said it. And I was like, "Excuse me?" She goes, you heard me. You either pick up your damn papers and get the hell out of my house or you take this book. I'm like, okay, I'll take the book because I needed the sale. I needed to make some money. And it was Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. And she even opened it up and signed it. She's not the author, but she signed it. And she put in there, something told me to give you this book, Love BB. And it sat, we were living at a friend's house at the time because we still couldn't even afford to get an apartment. And I finally decided to read it after a couple of weeks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really interesting. And somehow, some way, on my emails, I started getting this law of attraction stuff pulling up. And I was deleting it because I thought it was like a dating site. I'm like, law of attraction. I'm married. I don't need to be pulling crap up. So I kept deleting it. One day I went to go hit delete and it opened up and I went, wait a minute, this isn't a dating site. And I started reading it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like the law of attraction. This is like energy of the universe. And I'm like, this is almost kind of like what I'm reading in Eckhart Tolle's book. And it just kept escalating. And then I joined the West Jordan Chamber where I grew up. It's a city just outside of Salt Lake. And it used to be an old farm town. And now it's the third largest city here in the Valley. And I put my business card in for this drawing. This lady was up talking about body language and how to read body language. And she drew my card. Guess what the next book was that I got? It was another Eckhart Tolle's book, and it was The New Earth. And I'm like,
gosh,
okay, Father, you're telling me something here. Something is going on. And it just kept going after that. And I really started getting into reading a lot of the self-help books. I can't think of the guy's name. He was in the concentrations camp. Man's Meaning, what is it? Man's Meaning to Life or something like that. And I just started reading all kinds of different things, the four love languages, and it just started. Let's just say I stopped looking at life through a straw. It's like something was splitting it and it was just slowly starting to widen. And without me even realizing it, I was starting to grow. And it took some time for me to realize it, but I finally went, oh my gosh, I've come a long ways and didn't even know it. And the relationships that I built and the people who knew me, the things that they would say, I'm just like, I get emotional talking about it because it's like, they don't even know the old Al. This is all they see is me, who I am today. And I did it without really looking for it. I was wanting to go that direction, but I wasn't turning over every single rock going, okay, who's Al? Who's Al? I just kept moving forward and it just happened. Just like it just happened with my weekend alcohol and cocaine use.
Yeah. Man, that's so amazing. That makes me so happy for you because that was very similar to my journey. Like, I feel like my higher power is the universe and she just like puts things in front of you. And when you're open to it and you're kind of curious, you know, that open mind is key. Like you said, you're not seeing life through a straw anymore. Just open yourself up to all these possibilities. You never know who or what is going to land in your lap. And that's how you discover yourself.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Because I did a show this past Wednesday night, and the gentleman that was on it battled addiction for a long time. And he said, he goes, Al, I never went searching for myself. He goes, I just didn't. I just gave my life over to life and changed my mindset. And he goes, and it happened by itself. Because he goes, someone told me once, if you go searching for your life, you'll never find it. Because your eyes aren't open. But when you open your eyes and you open your mind, that's when the miracles start happening.
Yeah. It's there's this meditation that I listen to quite a bit, and it's about being in receiving mode. The gentleman's name is Andrew Martin, and he has you visualize yourself walking into a meadow that's full of wildflowers. And on the wildflowers are all these butterflies. And as you walk towards the flowers, the butterflies scatter, right? So the butterflies represent identifying yourself, what you want out of life, the things that you truly want for yourself. And as you walk towards them, of course, they fly away. It's when you get calm and just allow things to be that they start landing on your nose or your hands, and they just attract to you.
Yeah.
I really feel like just having an open mind. And you also talked about vulnerability. I love vulnerability. It is so hard for so many people to do, to share their stories, their struggles, but that's what brings us closer, knowing that you're a human being too. You've made mistakes. You've done some very, you know, a lot of things that you're ashamed of, embarrassed of, you know, at that time, but that's what brings us closer, the vulnerability and opening up. And that's what helps you grow as well.
You know, and Molly, I'm so glad that you brought that up. If I could share something really quick. When I started doing my public speaking and started the podcast, I started it because of my wife's battle with alcoholism. It took me down a pretty dark road, so dark that in 2019, I was on my way home from an event and I decided I was going to go get my pistol, go up in the mountains, and I was going to take my life because I couldn't handle coming home to what I came home to every day. I started talking about, I started opening up, and that's what got me to start the podcast. And I've only shared a little teeny, teeny bit of who I was, what I did. So here I've got guests coming on the show who's being vulnerable, right? They're opening up, they're telling their stories. I've had six people come on who told their stories for the very, very first time, have never told anyone. And I went and met with a gentleman. His name is Dave DeRocher. He's the executive director of a recovery center here in Salt Lake City called the Other Side Academy. They are self-funded. They help a lot of people that are getting ready to be sentenced to prison. They pull them out. They put them in this 2.5-year program. It's completely free. And they help build their character back up. And I had a meeting with him because I had the honor to be on stage with him in St. George, Utah, which is about 350 miles south of Salt Lake last year. And his story, the way he presented his story, intrigued me. And so I told him after, I says, I would love to sit down with you. I want to be that type of powerful speaker on stage like you. So anyway, he finally called me to his office a couple months ago. Now, this was August when we did the event. And he goes, why is it you want me to talk to you? And I told him, and he goes, so are you giving me permission to say what I need to say? And I said, I am. He goes, you stop telling your damn wife's story and start telling yours. He says, you will make more of an impact telling your story than you will your wife's. Well, his assistant, Robin Sims, who works there and went through the program, she happened to be my guest co-host that day on the show. We go to the studio. Our guest doesn't show. To this day, I still don't know what happened to her because the day before she was on. Anyway, I took Dave's advice. I told Robin, I says, how about you be the host and you interview me and I'll tell my story. And my wife happened to walk in during the show and she was just like in shock. She's like, oh my gosh, he's telling his story. I can't believe it, right? But here's the cool part. And I won't apologize for getting emotional because my wife says I'm sexy when I cry. So anyways, about 3 weeks ago, I got a phone call at work and it's my oldest daughter. She goes, hey dad, what's up? And I says, oh, just working on a house here. And she goes, okay, I need to talk with you. And she goes, and you're not going to like what I have to say at the first part of it, but please hear me out. And I'm going, okay, where is this going? She goes, Dad, when you started your show, I wanted to support you. And she goes, and I still want to support the show. But she goes, as time has gone, I got to where I didn't want to support you anymore. And she goes, the reason behind it is because I know your past. All you talked about was what Janann did to you. You played a victim. And she goes, and yes, you were. But she goes, but here's all these other people on your show talking about what their life has been like, and they're being vulnerable, and you're not saying anything. She goes, Dad, I found it so hard to want to support you. And she goes, and I talked to Rick, which is her husband, and Rick says, you have to figure it out on your own. And she goes, I just happened to click on one of your shows. And she goes, it was the show that Robin interviewed you and you told your story. And she goes, I played it again and listened to it again. I played it again. I listened to it a third time. As parents, we do our best to tell our kids how proud we are of them, right? I've done that with both my daughters. They're grown women. They're in their 30s. And I tell them how proud I am. I tell our grandkids that all the time. I didn't get that. I want them to know no matter what it is that they do, I'm proud of them. Doesn't matter how small it is. To have your child tell you that they're proud of you. Oh, holy cow. That. She just put tears in my eyes like she's doing right now. And it meant the world to me, because that also validated that the work that I've been doing is paying off, because my own daughter saw it and told me. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with your listeners.
Well, I'm going to be very honest with you. This week, I've been scouring the internet trying to find your story. And I even said to my boyfriend, I said, there's nothing on the internet where this guy is talking about himself. He talks about his wife all the time. And I don't understand. I said, I'm going to get him to tell his story.
And you did.
And so the fact that you're sitting here admitting to that and saying that again, things happen and you're not even expecting them, and it leads the way. The universe, God, whatever your higher power is, shows you the way. And I know what it feels like to have your kids tell you they're proud of you. So that is truly a gift for yes. you. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy, because ever since that day I told my story, Molly, man, I've been reaching out to so many people going, would you give me the opportunity to come on? Because I feel like I have a lot of making up to do. And it's time people know. Because like you said, you did a lot of searching, and it was all about my wife. You know, she did this, she did that. And my daughter was right. I played the victim, which a lot of us addicts do, right? We play victim. And I only shared little teeny bits of things. Yeah, I mean, I've had friends call me going, oh my gosh, we had no flipping clue. And it's like, that's because I was still hiding it. I hadn't been in my addiction since 2009, and I'm still freaking hiding it to this day. No more. No more. And I did my first public speaking event at a woman in business about a month and a half ago. And that was the first time I did my speaking event where I told my story, not my wife's. And Dave was right. The people that came up to me after the fact said, that was powerful. I had no clue. He nailed it 100%. And I'm so blessed that I didn't let my ego step in the way, because it started to. When he started on me, man, I was putting those bricks up as fast as possible. And then I went, no, wait a minute. I gave him permission to do this. And I just started taking him back down. And I just sat there and listened to him. And it was the best doggone thing I did.
Vulnerability.
Yes.
Helps you grow. You feel like you're a different person now?
Oh, gee. Yeah. I feel so much lighter, and I didn't even realize it. Robin told me when she was doing the interview, she goes, Al, I could literally see stuff melting off your shoulders. She goes, you probably didn't realize it, huh? I'm like, no. Well, I do now. You know, I feel it, and I'm so open to talk about it now, and it feels good.
That's amazing. I'm so happy for you, truly. Thank you. Well, it's been an honor having you on the show. If there's anything else that you would like to offer up as some advice for anybody that's out there listening today, that's struggling, that doesn't think that they can get through it on their own, like what kind of advice would you offer them?
Look in the mirror. Don't look away. Look in the mirror and look at yourself dead in your eyes and say that you're worth it. Because you are worth it. Your life will completely change. You can't do it alone. Find someone that you can trust. Don't be like I was during my wife's addiction, where I was trying to be her therapist instead of her husband. Find someone that's there for you, that understands what you're going through. That's the key too. You find someone who's gone through it, because they know exactly what you're going through. And it's hard. It really is hard, but if you believe in yourself enough and you find a higher power, again, it doesn't matter what it is. We've heard of people that their higher power was a goldfish. It doesn't matter what it is, whatever works for you. And just take these baby steps. Do not get frustrated. And if you slip, don't beat yourself up. Stand back up, dust yourself off, and just keep moving. Celebrate every single freaking day that you're not using. Just celebrate it. And before you know it, you're going to be a month in, 6 months in. My wife just hit over 2 years. You know, it happens. Just believe in yourself and inspire yourself.
So powerful. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. I'm going to throw your website and podcast down in the listener notes so everybody can find you and come listen to your podcast. I hope to hear more of your story on your podcast, sir.
Yep, you are. That's for sure. Yep.